But tonight, I am very pleased to have here John Miatek. He's a poet, and I love having poetry readings here. And he will be reading from his book, Things to Hope For. Thank you very much for coming to Many Rivers. We appreciate it.
Thank you very much. I just want to say this is my first reading in a long time. I recently had cancer, and during the time that I was down from the radiation treatments, it gave me a lot of time to go back through my poems and reassemble old friends. Several of them have been in magazines in the past years, but this was really a therapeutic experience for me, so much so that about 6 books followed in quick succession after this first one. But it's really a privilege to be here, and Jim, thank you for your kindness in inviting me. I divide the book into 4 parts of the seasons of the year, and that way it made it easy for me to put the poems together in kind of a system, I should say. The first part is called Spring, the Spirit Awakens. The way it is. Sometimes Coyote is crazy. He doesn't make sense. His children feel it, and it makes them uncomfortable. Their eyes roll nervously, wondering what is wrong. They all start yipping together and make a great noise. Sometimes this lasts for a little while. Sometimes it lasts all night. It's just the way it is. Kingston Range in March. Waking to the silence and the cold, night lets go slowly of special places. My eyes adjust to the browns and purples of the morning here. After breakfast, I visit Horned Toad, same place as last year, by the same rock. The first flowers are out now before the snakes, purple cow vetch, red paintbrush, maybe some cactus blooms over by Two People Rock. I am affectionate about this place, where a few bighorns still roam, where a few chimney-wavy arrowheads linger, where the mountains will tell you something if you are ready to listen. I was talking with my friend Clive Madsen the other day about this poem. He really liked it. He had been there and seen the bighorn sheep whip, which I've never had the chance to do in 20 years of going there, but I've seen plenty of trails. Celebration. This life Coyote lives too. They celebrate this life together, these coyotes, their songs carrying through the darkness under the stars of the whirling man. I teach high school over at Annalee, and one of the things I like to do in science when we go through astronomy is know the constellations from other cultures' viewpoints. And I've had a few experiences with the Navajo, where my daughter McKenna and I got to go out and work on a big mountain project, and I learned some of the constellation names. And the Whirling Man is actually what we call the Big Dipper. They call him the Whirling Man because if you watch him through the sky, he'll turn during the evening. April. McKenna racing down the dune toward the sole remaining block of ice in Little Traverse Bay. The line of clothes left by our daughter that morning stretches over even this distance to connect the three of us forever. She was very young at that point, and we had camped out on the dunes on Lake Michigan that night. And when she woke up in the morning, it was kind of early April still, and there was one big block of ice sitting in the bay next to the shore. And before we could stop her, she just took off, and there's just clothes flying everywhere. Here she was, about 3 years old, sitting out on this big block of ice, riding horseback on it. And it was hilarious. Summer. Stone Woman. Stone Woman whose wrinkles were canyons, felt the coolness where the shadows were lengthening. Sun lowered himself toward the horizon as a breeze began to move across the earth. A cook fire sprang up in the camp of Woman Who Sings, the smoke from which floated into the hills, mixing with the sage. Coyote called out to Woman Who Sings, "What are you cooking in the darkness, sister?" To which there was no reply, so Coyote called again, and the moon rose. One time when I was in the doghouse with my first wife, I sat out on the porch and tried to just regain my sense of peace, and all of a sudden this fantastic spider just came doing her web, and her web just went right across the moon as she did it. So that's where this poem comes from. Spider. At night, spider is busy. Her legs glisten as she's carried away on a silk thread past the moon. One of my habits when I go out into nature is I always bring back a rock or a crystal to kind of commemorate the journey. So that's where the next poem comes from. Rock. Sometimes we go a long ways through forests, deserts, rivers, bring home a stone. The stone is the symbol of the journey. It stays in the story for a reminder. Sometimes something speaks through the rock. It stirs us to feel something going on, something that it's not entirely us. I grew up in Ann Arbor, Michigan, and there's a lot of old streets in the middle of the town that are paved over, but the streets underneath are brick, and I remember those well from growing up. One of them was Division Street, so I wrote a poem about it. Ann Arbor. Once in a while, the pavement wore down, patches of brick pushed through the blacktop under the elms. Tires had to work harder on the brick, making a clacking sound as they slapped and bounced down Division Street. Many years ago, I was part of this picture too, gathering horse chestnuts with my grandpa along sidewalks stamped WPA 1932. I remember these places. In my sleep, I ask for them sometimes. One of the neatest journeys I've ever gotten to take was in high school. We had a Boy Scout leader that was fabulous, and he'd take us all over the place. And one of the places he took us to was Hudson Bay. And we got to canoe for 3 days up the Moose River up to James Bay that goes into it. Canoeing up the Moose River. This river runs north, meets the waters of James Bay. The Cree know this place. Where I live in Forestville, like probably a lot of you have in the garden, I have a little fence outside my window, and I like to watch the lizards out there. And I wonder how they adjust to each other once in a while. Lizards. There is a post just outside my window that is lizard territory. A dark fellow, maybe a blue belly, spends his spring day doing push-ups from the top of that post. His neighbor, a lighter-colored lizard, watches from a fence close by, doing calisthenics in the warm sun. Who is the great lizard of these parts? Maybe that's already been decided between the two of them. Maybe it will be decided when the cat shows up. Things I carry. The chestnut Grandpa found, so smooth, so brown, filling my small hand. a couple of summers ago, I went to a really fabulous place. I was hunting for topaz out in Utah, and on the way back, a friend of mine had told me about the Ruby Range, and it's probably about 30 miles south of Elko. So I decided I'd take a look at it, and it's beautiful. It's like the Grand Tetons rising up out of the bare desert, and just there's a huge flyway there for the waterfall, and it's just beautiful. But what was really amazing was the amount of animals around. So I wrote several little poems, some of them haikus, about it. Ruby Mountains in July. Along the roadside, white mare, brown colt, lion sage. Dawn, Ruby Mountains. Ruby Mountains haiku. Fat young bumblebee bending a blue penstemon. Summer is so short. Mira. Happy with small things, butterfly leaping. Look at this flower, and this, and this. Meetings. Ruby Valley, June. Ground squirrels commune in the road. Open range country. Poem before a divorce. I do not drink because I've lost you. I rejoice because I've known you. I am not angry for your trespasses on my sanity. I am happy for the moments when you gave me everything you were. I do not look back and say, what if? I look ahead and say, why not? We have chosen different paths, two friends often do. Yet the love does not fade. That is what my heart tells me. I count all of these moments like a blessing. Yesterday, today, someday. The next poem was actually, the whole poem was from one dream. And I use dreams a lot. I do songwriting too, and I'm always amazed at some of the things that will roll right out onto the pen from a dream. Dreams to remember. Some dreams teach you things. Maybe that beauty is in the way someone touches you. Maybe that some things can only be learned from children. A dream may say that sometimes you need to ask, what are the customs here, so that everyone feels comfortable being in the same place together. Sometimes a dream will come with a gift, giving you a part of yourself that fits just right, a part that got misplaced a long time ago. Even in your sleep, you will know the truth of these things. Autumn. Thistles. Fall already. Thistles lean over the pond for a last good look. Autumn. Autumn. Fertilizing, seeding, watering, sleeping. Starting. Womb of all things. A lot of times we don't know when we go away to college what to expect, if it's going to be a whole lot of work or what the heck we want to do when we grow up. But the things I remember most from college are conversations with friends and meeting new people. And this was for one of my Navajo friends I'd met at Northridge. Late fall, Northridge. I ride my bike past an old farm one fall evening, where the wind blows around the smell of hay. Meeting a friend at the library, we study little. Talk about the cold weather back home in Arizona, back home in Michigan. This was another poem that came out of college time. Secrets. One day wind went into long grass, over ivy, through resting maples, spreading a million secrets. Leaves gave sound to each secret, then forgot them as new rumors came along. They never stopped for a second. And where the sun touched, it was warm. The wind was strong and warm, too. On this day, you could hear the secrets being rattled for miles. Somewhere, you were one of them. Possibilities. I was not always gentle nor peaceful. Sometimes a great storm would rise up in me, and I would scatter those before me like ashes. Sometimes my anger or my fear would take over. Then I was nobody's friend. Even in these days of sunlight, there are still shadows. Some of those shadows I'm afraid to look into. Afraid they might open up, the memories flooding out, telling me that what I am now is a lie. Love, anger, peace, hate. Your mother will tell you that they are emotions. I will tell you that they are possibilities. Story. When Rin travels down the canyon, it visits our fire, asking for a story. Winter poems. One kind of pleasure. It's a pleasure feeling hot tea inside, going down, while the wind brushes against the windows and the house is still dark. What is remembered in December? It is not the stars we remember, but their stories. Cold December night. Next poem is from my experience on Big Mountain. My daughter and I went out on a food drive to Big Mountain several years ago, and it was really a wonderful experience right before winter. Snow was coming down in the pass, and my daughter is sitting right here. Was readily accepted by the clan that we were delivering food to. They all wondered what clan her mother was from, and so she was quite popular. It was fun to watch her play with all the kids. And one night we had a wonderful experience where the clan met in a hogan, and everybody came, and the grandmothers were there, and there was a pot-bellied stove set up right in the middle of the hogan, and you could see the stars outside through the ceiling hole. And then when they closed the door, the only light in there was the light reflecting from the pot-bellied stove, and the grandmothers sat closest to the fire and held the young ones, and the warm light on their faces and the light going up through the smoke hole, and the grandmothers were singing to the children to keep them quiet, and it was one of the most magical things I've ever seen and felt in my life. Big Mountain. Grandmother singing in the orange light of an old pot-bellied stove, rocking her grandchild to sleep. Wood smoke rises through the stovepipe, disappearing into the blackness under the stars. Ghosts. There are ghosts everywhere. Maybe your parents or your grandparents, an uncle or aunt you were close to, those people for a start. But there are others, not just people, wolf, grizzly, strange birds, creatures that shook the earth. Their ghosts are here too. Great forests of trees, their shadows surround the places we live, trembling as if some ancient wind still moved through their boughs. When you travel someplace wild, listen. Perhaps the song of something very old will catch your ear, and you will know the truth of this. Perhaps you will build a campfire, sing a song of your own into the darkness, a song the ghosts will hear, a song the ghost will know you by when you join them someday. My poems are quite short compared to some folks, so I'm probably a little short on the time.
Time for questions?
Sure. But if anybody'd like to make any comments or ask questions.
Do you ever combine, you mentioned you write songs, so I assume you do music?
Yes.
Have you ever thought of doing music with your poems? Or?
I know Clive has a reading set up at Cafe Roma in another week or so, where they're going to have a cellist in to accompany poets. I haven't done that though yet. I've seen it done a number of times, but what was your first name?
Carl.
Thank you, Carl. I'm sorry. I had the pleasure of talking with Carl earlier, and we were talking a little bit about William Stafford. And over the years, I got to work with William Stafford several times, and we became friends, and Robert Bly. And Robert would always bring out some music when he was doing some of his readings, and it was pretty cool. I liked it. Yeah.
When and how did you get started writing?
Actually, I started with the songwriting first, but I had a art teacher in high school that turned me on to Robert Bly. She gave me Silence in the Snowy Fields when she saw some of my writing, and that got me started. I really love that book. I still have it. So that was about 69. So I've been writing since then.
Do you have more books?
Yes, I have some books up here, if anybody would like to get one, and I'm working on the second one right now.
So I kind of missed, you might have said it at the beginning, but did you use the writing to help you go through the hard parts that you're going through physically with some illness and stuff? Did you actually find that writing helps you?
Yes, I had prostate cancer, which, you know, can be, you know, compared to other cancers, a relatively simple process, but the radiation made me really deathly ill, and they said it was the worst they'd ever seen, and I was just ready to go, okay, who gets what? And then one day I just kind of said, well, you know, if I got to go, I'm going to make sure I get all the writing out for my daughter. And boy, once I got started, it was like, I mean, if you can say being flat on your back for a month and a half was a good time, it was good. I mean, I really got a lot of writing out, and it was great. I wouldn't recommend it for others, but...
Do you have any
questions?
What did working with Stafford do to change the way you wrote?
I think it changed me more as a person. Stafford was such a peaceful man. He really brought out that side of me. If I ever had a mentor in my life, I would say it was him. But I think it gave you the opportunity to sit and really... I've always been a good observer, but he would put more detail into that. And his habit was, he got up every morning at about 5 o'clock, and he'd write a couple hours before the rest of the world was up, and that was his thing. So I learned that, but I think just the stillness that a poem can create, this space, because he, as you can see with my poems, most of them resonate off of something in nature, and then just they've added their stillness. So what can you add that's quiet like that? but also patience. Because some people are, working with Bly was wonderful, but he'll let you know, if you're doing something that just seems tied up and not in your writing, but in your own emotional mess, whatever you're carrying around, he'll let you know. But Stafford's was very calm and just seemed to touch on those things in myself.
Your ending lines strike me as being particularly powerful. Do you, as you write, do you feel them coming on? How do you know when you're at the end of a poem?
That's a really good question. Mm-hmm. I think that's something I learned partially from William too. But I don't know, you just feel it. You just feel it. It's like you're walking through a room and you open the door, and then there it is.
After it's out.
Mm-hmm. I never seen it in advance. It's just like, wow, okay. Yeah. That's it. It just comes.
Do you ever struggle with a poem, or does it just come?
Most of the time it just comes, but there's times when I'll struggle a little bit. I won't feel what Carl just asked about. I won't feel that closure, and I'll have to wait for it. And sometimes it'll come in a week, and sometimes it'll be 5 years later. I'm looking at it, and it'll go, oh, this is it. But maybe it just waits for that moment in your life till you feel the closure yourself.
I had the sense of the poems created a longing in me to renew my connections and acquaintance with nature, and really, the images and all of that created new longing to slow down and be with natural things.
Thank you for sharing that. It's funny because when I get in a situation like a couple of years ago when I did the Ruby Valley haikus, I started out in Utah, and I probably spent a month and a half working my way back here. And in that month and a half, I bet I said two sentences to people. I didn't see any people. But it was being like in sixth grade again, where you just go outside of your house and you sneak off into the woods for the whole day and you're building a treehouse, and you don't have to talk to anybody. There's such joy in it. And so I'm glad that it conveyed over to you that that's where it was coming from.
One of the images that I love, I don't know, at least this is my image now, that canyons are grandmother's wrinkles. Exactly how you said it, but that's now what I have, and I just love that idea. Grandmother Earth and the canyons are her wrinkles. I don't know if you remember the image.
I do. Yeah, the stone woman whose wrinkles are canyons.
Yeah.
I have to say that's my favorite poem of all of mine. It just was one of those ones that was so magical to me that all the images fit together, and that was one of the ones, Carl, that the closure, when it came with the coyote asking about what's for dinner, and then she didn't answer and he called again and the moon rose, and I went, whoa. I was going, wow, what a present,
you can't dream that stuff up.
No,
it's gotta come from someplace else.
Oh, it just it blew me away. Because I know most of you guys probably write too, and it's just like you're a receptacle. I mean, you're just There's just these thoughts passing through, and they don't belong to you. They didn't come from you. They just, you were lucky enough to touch them.
I'm wondering if you read the dream poem again.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't hear the question.
If I would read the dream poem again. And it really all did come in one dream in one night. I just woke up with dreams to remember. Some dreams teach you things. Maybe that beauty is in the way someone touches you. Maybe that some things can only be learned from children. A dream may say that sometimes you need to ask, what are the customs here? So that everyone feels comfortable being in the same place together. Sometimes a dream will come with a gift, giving you a part of yourself that fits just right, a part that got replaced a long time ago, got misplaced a long time ago. Even in your sleep, you will know the truth of these things. Thank you.
Your wife was Native American?
No. I don't want to embarrass her. She could be in this room. No, she wasn't.
Because you said about asking about your daughter's clan.
Well, it's a funny thing. My daughter is so multi-ethnic that when we go different places, she fits
really
in.
Claims her.
We went to Tahiti once, and it was like the people just mobbed her and thought she was one of the locals. And I said, "Where's your mom?" Saw her with me. But no, she's not.
I was wondering if that had anything to do with your love of nature, because I always think of Native Americans as being very, very at one with nature. And so many of your poems, you seem very at one with nature. That doesn't obviously have that much to do with it.
Well, it was the way I dealt with family issues when I was young. Like everybody, we had our issues at our house, and the way I dealt with them was I went out and got close to nature, and it's just kind of stayed. But I use it in my poetry a lot because it's something that brings me a lot of peace.
I also liked your poem about divorce. It was very loving, and that's very rare under those circumstances.
Oh, thank you.
To see the loving side, that was very impressive. I like that.
Well, she's an awful nice woman. So, you know, it was kind of a way, I think, that we healed things between us, was to have a rapport from a distance.
That's certainly possible. It's really nice.
Thank you. Thank you.
So what are some of your local refuges? Nature places
when you're
just in the area
of the I lived up in Camp Meeker for a while, so there was some canyons I liked to walk there. And when we lived on Occidental Road, there was my friend Oman Stromswald, we rented his property, and he's got a canyon that goes all the way from Occidental Road all the way back to Grayton Road that's just full of redwoods and really beautiful. There's an old Pomo trail back there, and I found camping areas and chipping grounds. And I tend to go to the desert mostly. It's a little further than local, but that's where I hang out a lot. I'll go to the desert when I have time. And I'll go up into the Sierras too. Do a lot of hiking up in there.
You mentioned a little bit about Stafford's practice in writing. What things have you learned that have helped you write or sustain your writing or practice writing? Others might benefit from.
You know, I think as a person, because being in nature a lot, you tend not to talk as much or be quite as as social as some folks. I've learned from some writers that less is more. So my poems tend to be short. Keeping the language simple. I think the hardest poems for me to write to read are people that have, you like to use a lot of really big terms or a lot of historical background in it where you're just kind of looking at it. I think it's almost something that needs to flow. But I think the biggest thing that I would say is that every single word is important. Each word, and believe me, for me, each word has to resonate with me. That's where I'll go back and edit a poem if I'm reading it out loud like this and I hear something that just doesn't quite resonate. I'll go back and replace that word. But I would say that's the most valuable thing to me, is that every word's got to have meaning to the poem. I read a lot of, you can probably tell from my writing, I read a lot of haiku too, and of course the three basic guys, Basho and Busan and Issa, but you know, some of the other folks too, and I think just the simplicity gets you a lot closer to nature. I like when Snyder can be real simple in his poetry, and he can do that too. He does that too. So, did that answer?
Well, okay. What have you learned about the discipline of writing? I mean, in terms of, do you do it every day? Do you set aside time in the morning? Do you go through periods of intense writing? Just how have you sustained 40 years of writing?
Well, I certainly pay a lot of attention to when the muse is there. I write more in clusters. I feel like there's certainly more time. There's times when it flows, and I'll get 8 poems in one day that I felt were good and strong. And then there's other times when I'll just write. And I try to be somewhat disciplined about it, spend a half an hour on it every day. Not as long as William. But life just kind of takes over sometimes. And sometimes I just think there's not that much to say on a particular day. So I would say it's kind of cyclical. The songwriting's the same. There'll be times when I never force it out. I never try to make something just happen. But I'll dream the whole song. When I do a song, I'll wake up in the middle of the night and I'll have 3 verses of it done in about 2 minutes. And it's just there. So sometimes I feel like, yeah, if I push it, I'll create something. But sometimes I feel like the muse just, when she's ready, she'll go. Well, the next reading I'll be doing a reading over at the SoCo coffee shop and some various ones around, but I really appreciate your comments tonight.
When will you be doing the SoCo
one? It's supposed to be October the 2nd, I believe, but Andrew was going to get back to me because he said it might change because they're doing some construction and things over. But I'm going to try, Carl mentioned a couple of places in Healdsburg, so I'm just, now that my book is done, I want to do as much reading as I can.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.